Hi, I'm Siobhan, your sales how-to gal, bringing you the first interview episode of Season 2. This episode is entitled, Be a Subsidiary of Your Employer, and I'll be speaking with James Elam of Elemental, specifically about operating your practice as a business within a larger law firm. Often, if we have a job, we don't think of ourselves as being in business, but as Janice Howroyd often says, you should own your own business no matter who signs your check. James is the perfect person to expound on that premise for the legal industry. Now, I've known James for perhaps longer than either one of us would care to admit. James and I were both upstart attorneys in Philadelphia. I was at PricewaterhouseCoopers learning how to sell to really big companies, but James was doing something that's actually difficult. James was an associate at an established legal firm that didn't have an entertainment law practice, and he wanted to practice entertainment law. Later in this podcast, I'm going to ask James to tell us what he's up to now, and I think that will illuminate why he was so keenly interested in entertainment law. But for now, let's just accept that he had a burning desire to be in that field, and he set about making that happen. Now, I want the audience to know that James's experience is relevant whether you're interested in helming a new practice group at your firm or you just want to grow an existing one there. With that said, James, hi, how are you?
Hi, Siobhan. I'm glad to talk to you again.
Good talking to you as well. I want to get into your early legal career. I'm sure a question that's on our listeners' minds is, how on earth did you convince your partners to let you embark on such an undertaking as launching a new practice group at that firm?
Well, you know, I think that it really came down to them recognizing my passion, and not just for the entertainment industry, but they saw my passion manifest in a level of work that really stood out to them. Even when I went to law school, like I'm sure you recall, everyone in law school wants to do entertainment and sports law. So, you know, the people I went to law school with, you know, I would bet you they would acknowledge the fact that I was going to be an entertainment lawyer, because I really set out on a path of work that really gave me an advantage that I felt over my peer group. I literally even came up with a catchphrase based around how I built my entertainment law practice, and that is, you have to be as good as you say you are.
Mm-hmm.
That requires it's a short statement, but it's a very heavy statement, because first of all, you have to be good, which means you have to put in enough work to actually be good. You have to do that above and beyond level of work to really establish yourself as the expert in your field. So, you know, you have to do the homework. You have to do the grind work. And back in our day, this was me standing in front of a copy machine, for example, copying hundreds of pages out of the Bender books so I could go home and read contracts, like standing there flipping the pages over one by one so I could have these materials, and going out and aggressively networking and working so that I could work. I worked with a few different entertainment lawyers while I was in school because I wanted that experience. And this is all on top of doing very well in law school. So I literally created like a whole area of self-study for myself that I really just dove into aggressively. And that really just...
People don't know how good they have it, James, that all the technology does a lot of that for them now that you had to do manually.
Oh, don't get me started. When I mentor literally hundreds of kids who go to law school, including some that are in law school now, and the tools that they have now are infuriating.
Okay, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, it's no problem at all. But I mean, it's like it was a whole different level of work that was necessary back then. There was no YouTube. There was barely even any internet, really. You know, you had to really get out there and do that work. And so the second part of this, the statement was, you know, be as good as you say you are. And that means you have to say that you're good. And so I literally aggressively networked and marketed myself to the point where one of the partners at my firm, the first year I was there, he said, you go through business cards like you're standing out on the corner giving them to people. You know, he said, and that's impressive, you know. And so it stood out the fact that I was even working that hard to really market and network myself and to put myself in front of people. And so it was that level of work that I put in on top of the hours that you're required to keep at a firm. You know, you're actually in the 90s, so you had FaceTime hours, you know, you're there all the time. You have your probably 2,000 hours you had to bill. And so, you know, I'm doing all of that and aggressively marketing and developing this practice. And so I think that, you know, that level of work really showed the firm that not only would I not let my workload slip, but that I was, you know, really the type of person that could really get out there and do something special if I put my mind to it.
Excellent, excellent. And I love what you said. I've never heard it said before, but the way you said it is you have to actually say you're good. You have to promote yourself, and you have to be comfortable promoting yourself. And that's something that I hope that the listeners didn't miss in what you said there. That was a super important tip. So you're at a firm, and talk a little bit about how the infrastructure that was at that firm, you know, what that meant to you versus trying to go out and do it on your own.
Well, a couple of things. One, the infrastructure of the large firm was something that I'll never forget about. I remember learning about the intricacies of really drafting contracts, writing letters in ways that I lean on every day. Like just the way that I even speak and talk to people, I still lean on a lot of the practices that I picked up working in that firm. You know, working in a bigger firm, you know, you have the experience of the older lawyers. When you're typically at a smaller firm, they kind of throw you to the wolves and just let you figure it out on your own. And so, you know, I appreciated the benefit of having that structure around me. Now, the tricky part was they didn't have anyone who had any idea about how an entertainment practice should work. So I had to figure that out on my own as well, which was very difficult. I mean, they had to figure out how to bill people, how to invoice people, how to retain people, how to really develop those relationships. Like, it's all very precarious, and you guys all know that, you know, you can't force someone to be your client when you're a lawyer. They could, you know, milk you for hundreds of hours, and if you're working, you know, for on a commission-based, and then they could just stop calling you.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, it happens to lawyers all the time, and so, you know, it was a very I had to be very deliberate and very thoughtful in the way that I brought in clients, the way I networked with clients, the way I marketed my services to clients. A lot of times these are people without tremendous resources when I met them, so I had to figure out how to navigate that part of thing within a big firm space. You know, we're used to, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 retainers when you walk in the door.
Right. And so how'd you convince the partners to let you bring in folks who didn't have any money up front?
Well, I had to go out and make money too.
Okay.
So, it was, you know, I had to go out and make money so that I could bring in people without money.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Tell me about the tools you used to attract clients. What were you doing to meet clients, a prospect?
Well, again, a lot of it is just marketing and networking. You know, you have to... It takes, like, the same gentleman who told me, who made the note about me going through my business card so fast also gave me some of the best advice I ever got in my life. And he said that it takes you about 5 years after you meet somebody to make money with them. And what that gave me was a change in approach, in that I didn't run up on people like, if I don't make money with you today, I don't care about you.
Right.
And so, you know, even when you and I met, like, we developed a relationship, but it wasn't about money. It wasn't about... Hey, you know, if we can't make money right now, then I have no use for you, you know, and so you have to, you know, just developing that level of character with people was unique in a lot of ways. And so I just really leaned into, you know, the networking of it, as well as being a strong and informed advocate for the people that I work with. So, I mean, it had to, like, the word had to get around to a large extent as well. But you need to put those seeds out there so that it can.
And there was no social media, but did you use traditional media at all?
I did use traditional media. I used to, you know, take advantage of being in the media much more, doing interviews. Although, I mean, honestly, it wasn't me pursuing these interviews. I was never the type who was out beating the pavement trying to get interviewed, but I did get a lot of recognition and notoriety for my work. And so I would take advantage of the media, and I would also, a lot of it was just being visible.
Okay.
And back then that meant, you know, a lot of times just being out and being seen and being around and patiently developing relationships. I mean, relationships are developed over years. Like for someone to really look at you and just be comfortable with you, like it takes a lot of time. And you know, people want that instant gratification, and even more so now than ever. And that's just never how things have worked.
Okay, absolutely. So do you remember the first client you landed, how that occurred, how it felt when you got that first one on your own, that, you know, no partner had to give you an assignment. You had won your own assignment. Tell us about how that occurred and how it felt.
Oh, goodness. You know, the sad part is I really don't remember who was my first client. I don't have any idea. Well, partly because I started the process of developing clients years before I was an attorney. As I mentioned, I was in law school beating the streets and nightclubs at night, going to entertainment industry events. So I was doing those things in law school. So by the time I became an attorney, I was already ready to start pulling in clients. And so I started pretty early in terms of being able to bring in people who would generate revenues, just because I put that time in, just becoming a trusted face, a trusted source, someone who they could just even talk to, you know. And so when things got down to, you know, when it came down to being real, like, the clients started kind of pouring in the door for me, honestly. And I don't even remember who would be my first.
And it was first. Because, like you said, you started early. A lot of times, you know, with lawyers, the only thing we're doing in law firms or wherever we're working, the only thing we're doing is substantive work,
right?
You know, practicing law. And that's not enough. You should be doing business development really from day one. And you know, that's what your career shows. And frankly, that was my experience as well. I was already selling by my second year. So that's very important what you just brought up. Okay. How has that business development ability benefited you in the long term? I guess what I'm asking is, you know, what are you up to today, 20 years later?
Sure. Well, I've always been one that really believed in the strength of relationships. And so, and I've also been a bit of a polymath in my approach to things. So, you know, after practicing law, actually before law school, I was actually a champion bodybuilder. I actually went to law school the day I won a competition. The day after I won a competition. Sorry about that. And I produced television and film. I run a technology firm. I've developed commercial real estate. So I'm just the type of person who likes to learn and grow and develop things. But the way I've evolved my practice and business so far is that I really have accumulated a group of those shining stars that I've come across over the years, whether guys I went to engineering school with as undergrads, venture capitalists, coders, technologists, scientists. And I've created a group of people, and now we create patented products. We just had our first spin-off fintech company that's launching now. I'm launching a fintech challenger bank with a rapper by the name of Master P, and a gentleman by the name of James Lindsay, and another gentleman by the name of John Gossier, who's a venture capitalist. So I reached into the bag of relationships and basically created something that would benefit all of us in a field that we thought would be mutually beneficial to not only us, but something that we could do to even give back to the community in a lot of ways, and that we envision creating a bank that will empower our customers as opposed to acting as a much more predatory institution as they've typically been involved with our communities.
Absolutely. I agree. So what I'm hearing here is something, of course, I already know because I know you, but you've always been achievement-oriented, and you've always been forward-looking as to, you know, you might not know exactly where you're going to end up when you do something, but you know you have a direction in which you're heading. And so because you have direction, you end up going someplace positive, somewhere toward where you're going, you know, where you intend.
Always say you have to make yourself get lucky. And sometimes, you know, that requires you going out on a limb and people don't understand what you're doing and why you're doing it, you know, but the reality is that's why it's called vision. Like, you have to see things that other people can't see, you know, and that requires work and it requires faith in yourself and dedication. And a lot of people really aren't up for those things. Like, they just want to show up where they're supposed to work and they want their shekels for being there for X amount of hours. And then they want to go home and watch Netflix. And that's life to a lot of people. You know, and that's just never been me. I've always just been someone who wanted to push myself and see what I was capable of.
Absolutely. You know, some people listening may not believe they even have the nerve to do what you've done. You know, what would you say that might encourage them that it is hard work, but there's, you know, it's possible?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely possible. I mean, and really, there's even levels of risk. I mean, I'm not, you know, you don't even want to be out here taking wild risks, but you can take controlled risks and really, you know, try different things, and that's how you learn about yourself and the world, honestly. Like, it's a lot of people grow up in a bubble. Like, you know, you get out of high school and you go to college and then you go to a little job, and that's your little space, and you just never leave that little safe space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not something, you know, I'm a black man in America. I grew up in Philly. I never lived in a safe space.
I hear you. So really just taking that first step, taking that first risk and realizing that even if it doesn't turn out exactly as you wanted to, it didn't kill you. So that might be the way to become less risk averse, I suppose.
Well, yeah, you know, I always say that you have to try things, because the more that you try things, the more that you'll fail, and the more you fail, you realize that failure doesn't hurt.
I couldn't agree more. What hurts most is not trying.
If you try to make the jump off the swing, you realize after you get up and dust yourself off that you got to try again on how to make that landing this time.
Yep, absolutely. That's definitely encouraging. You know, the loss or the failure is just a stepping stone toward getting it right the next time.
That's how I've always envisioned trying anything. Like, I've never looked at anything, even if something didn't go my way, I'm like, okay, what went wrong? Let's figure it out. Let's jump again.
Like, you know,
let's get it right this time. Like, you know, because that's how you learn things. Like, I always, like, even with that, you know, and I won't linger too long, but even the gentleman I told you that mentioned that it takes you 5 years to learn things, I kind of extrapolated that into, I guess, Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours. So I always say that if you didn't do something for 5 years, you didn't even do it. Because it'll take you a year just to put down data points.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll take you a bunch of more years to figure out how to address and use those data points. And then by the fifth year, you'll figure out what you did. And then you're pretty good at it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, this information may have helped someone who's mulling whether to stay independent or join a larger firm or whether to go solo. I think, you know, a lot of times people don't imagine that they can be able to do what they want within a larger setting where there's support and infrastructure built in. So, James, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story. It's important that we share this kind of information with fellow attorneys, whether we're still practicing or not, because lawyers, we don't always have career coaches or mentors who've done exactly what we want to do. So it's good if there's a source for this kind of information so that we can see the path to where we might want to end up. So let me wrap up here. To my listeners, I think at the end of my last podcast episode, I promised that I'd do a podcast about how to get the most out of virtual conventions that you may be attending this summer. On balance, though, I think that content would be better delivered in writing. So look for a blog post on the resources page of the Sales for Lawyers website. That's www.sales4lawyers.com. If it isn't there today, one of my team members is updating a similar post that I did for in-person conferences. So it may take us a couple of days to get it up there about how to take advantage of virtual conferences. So let's thank James Elam again, James Elam of Elemental. And I'm Siobhan, your sales how-to gal. Bye for now.